Birthday 180 served up by Wendy's. Dan Orlovsky, recently retired NFL quarterback, and he's now doing great things in the post-NFL career with his player assessments. You can catch him on the NFL Network now, and his periscopes and podcasts are excellent as well. He's been nice enough to join us here on the Midday 180 for the last couple of months, and he's nice enough to join us today. Dan, what's up, man? How are you?
What's going on? I'm doing well. How's that?
Great. Great to have you back on. We were discussing Mariota and LaFleur, and we've been doing that quite a bit since they've made the new hires that they have in the coaching staff here. Can this system go against what Mariota wants to do naturally? We get into maybe overanalyzing what we've seen from him in OTAs and minicamp. Is it a progression that's a slow process for him?
Yeah, I mean, to answer both those questions, it's simply yes. So can it go against what he wants to do naturally? Absolutely. The system that originated with Mike Shanahan and then Gary Kubiak, and now it's gone to his son Kyle and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur, this system is based on structure. It's based on, let me put it this way, the quarterback always being able to handle the worst-case scenario when it comes to his feet. Okay, you don't want to teach a quarterback, yeah, you can stand back in the pocket for 3, 4, 5 hitches and throw the ball downfield, because that's the best-case scenario. This system teaches you how to play in the worst-case scenario. It allows you to be incredibly efficient. And so that's a little contrary to a quarterback, especially a guy like Marcus Mariota, who's athletic, because those guys feel, okay, I can sit back there, and if something happens, I'll just move around, because that's a talent they're blessed with. So, it's a little bit contrary to what his natural reactions are going to be. In quarterback, sometimes we sit back there and go, wait, my pocket's clean. I can just, you know, hang out here. Well, the premise of that offense is that's not realistic. And so we want you to be able to handle the worst case scenario. You know, how long does it take? It takes a long time. And I said this to you guys back in the springtime. There's going to be significant growing pains. At first, it would look ugly for Marcus because it's trying to fit the square peg in the round hole almost type stuff. And you look at it like that, like, why are you making me do it this way? And as long as you don't give up what you really want, but what you want right now, it'll work out in the end. It just takes time.
Dan, I was thinking of this over and over as I watched, particularly the two minicamp practices that the Titans had. Now, they were down their two top receivers for this. Rishard Matthews hasn't practiced all spring, and Corey Davis was out of these. But I routinely felt like guys weren't getting open for Marcus. He was patting the ball. He was, even in like 7-on-7, having to go to a second or third read. Now, the combination of things is a new offense. Those two receivers are missing. The cornerbacks are supposed to be the strength of this team with Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson and Logan Ryan. But you reacted to me tweeting something about that in terms of continued non-surprise. Factoring in those other elements, you're not surprised at all to hear a report like that, it seems like.
No. I mean, because I've seen this offense really take away my experience with it. I've seen it, just watched it, in a guy like Matt Schaub, who I saw him go through an offseason and go, well, I'm going to play a bunch because this guy's struggling. And then even in training camp going, you know, I got to be ready because it's taking him some time. And then eventually clicking with him, and those situations in 7-on-7 when he was patting the ball or holding on to it, or, you know, oh, the defense is celebrating, that would have been a sack, those became less and less and less. And then I saw Jared Goff in training camp last year have the same thing and struggle mightily. And we'd watch tape, and Jared would have a stretch of incompletions or holding the ball. And Jared, what's taking you so long to throw the football? You know, what happens is, it's just like anything else. The more you get reps at it, the more you understand it, the more you get comfortable with it. I'm sure there's an aspect that Matt LaFleur is learning Marcus Mariota as much as Marcus Mariota is learning Matt LaFleur's offense. So what are the things he's good at? What are the things he doesn't see as well? That's a big deal for LaFleur, is to understand that about Mariota. But I'm not surprised about it at all. I mean, and guys, this is going to be the case in training camp as well. You're going to see struggles all the way through. I promise you, mid-August, there's going to be days where you're going to go, uh-oh, what's going on? Fans are going to sit there. There's going to be parts of preseason games. But I do believe this. I said this yesterday on NFL Network. I think that I used the analogy that Mariota's kind of been like a guy who goes to the department stores and just buys stuff off the rack. You know, you'll make it look nice, and there's some good stuff out there. But I think this offense is one of those times where he gets a tailor-made suit for him, and just the confidence level will rise. It's a perfect, perfect fit for him. It's just going to take time. Now, it's not going to take till 2020, no, but it's not going to happen in August yet either. So I would imagine those struggles will continue, but they'll become less and less and less.
What's the timetable, you think? Because obviously Mike Vrabel's inherited a team that went to the playoffs last year, 9-7, and if we're a couple games into the season and seeing the defense and the run game need to buy time, or do you think through a full training camp is enough and that we'll see the light switches start to flip?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is all with the premise that we think, okay, let's make the assumption that Matt LaFleur can call plays, because that's the the elephant in the room. Can he do it at the NFL level consistently? Let's make the assumption that he can. Yeah, through the back end of training camp and then, you know, your first week or two of running it in games and whatnot, you're going to see that marked improvement. Now, he won't master it until next season. That's just the reality. It takes 18 months for a guy to truly, you know, get a really, really confident understanding about an offense. Now, you can go function at a high level before that. So I would imagine back end of training camp, that first week or two, you're going to see moments and stretches of good play. And then as long as they stay healthy, and like I said, LaFleur can call plays, those moments will become longer and longer and longer and full games. At, you know, first month of the season, you'll probably see, okay, Marcus Mariota is completely comfortable in this offense now. And the offensive play caller is comfortable in him and the stuff that he likes to run.
Dan Orlovsky, our guest. Dan, people may not know that you were in camp with the Rams last summer. Were there times when LaFleur actually called plays in the preseason?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things, and it's a really impressive thing for a head coach, you know, Sean McVay to do. He's not doing it because he's lazy. He's doing it to, you know, prepare these guys for their own opportunities. LaFleur called, so we played at Oakland, and LaFleur called the great majority of the second half. And I actually remember he had to ended up calling it basically a game-winning drive with the backup from last year, and I think he'll be going to this year, Sean Mannion. And I thought Matt did a nice job, because I was sitting there I was probably one of the few guys that knew Matt was calling the plays. And so I was in the game on the sideline, turned the play call and going, okay, it's a good call, or I don't know, but good call. And he ends up calling some plays that allow Sean to lead them to basically a game-winning drive. And I remember being in the locker room with him afterwards going, hey, you know, I'm not just saying this. That was well done by you. You know, you called a good drive for him. I think he called a big part of our third preseason game last year, at least parts of the second half. So I think he's done a little bit of it. It's not going to be all that different, you know, than playing the quarterback position. You know pretty early on if a guy can do it or not. And so I'm encouraged for him. There's a big difference between calling preseason games and calling real games when bullets are flying. But I do know this about him. I don't know if he can call plays yet, but I know that he knows how to tag defenses. I know that. I've sat in rooms with him and watched him go, okay, well, the defense is doing this, so we need to do stuff like this. And so that's going to be an absolute strength of his.
Dan, let's start broadly with this wide receiver group. I mean, the Titans did not address it in the draft or in free agency on any large level, which tells me at the front end, they feel okay about the group, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you had the opportunity, if you didn't and you had the opportunity to add to it, you would have. I actually like the group and where it fits. You know, this offense that Matt LaFleur is bringing, I mean, offenses are the same, right? In some capacity, I want really good players. That's gonna help me. But just knowing this offense and seeing it, so the number one thing this offense needs, a lot of people think they need like that Andre Johnson guy. That's not the number one thing this offense needs. It needs that Taylor that can just take the top off a defense with flat out speed. Because again, the offense scheme wise is going to try to get chunks down the field. Well, you can't get chunks down the field in the play action game unless the top has been taken off of the coverage. Those safeties feel speed down the field and either decide to, okay, if I'm going to sit and squat, well, that ball's going up over the top. Or we're so concerned with that ball going deep to Taylor that we've got to open up. And so now that chunk play that was a more difficult throw because the receiver can't go as deep as he wants to, he can take a little bit of a higher angle because those safeties are gone. So they've got the guy that can take the top off the coverage. Then
so that let's pause there for a second. So Taywan Taylor to you is a linchpin piece of this offense. We also talked with Greg Cosell about him, who said, you know, maybe they don't just see him as a slot guy, given the qualities he has. I saw the guy struggle too much for me as a rookie last year, where he caught a ball on the boundary and lost track of where he was, where he turned the wrong way on a ball down the hash marks, where if he turns inside, he's got a catch, but he turns outside. I'm expecting second-year growth, but you think this offense more favorable and featuring him than a malarkey one?
Yeah, just because of his vertical speed. I mean, he reminds me of back in Washington, they had a kid named Aldrick Robinson. You know, smaller in size. He wasn't a guy that was going to line up and wear guys out in man-to-man coverage, but he had vertical speed that would run by guys. And that's what opens up. In Houston, we had a guy like Jacoby Jones. Not a great receiver, but his speed opened up stuff down the field. And so that it's such a paramount part of this offense, because the play action is such a big deal that if you don't threaten guys vertically, everybody sits on stuff. And those safeties, that when you want to get those big crossers that are such a big part of the offense, when you want to get those big crossers, safeties can play both guys. I don't have to get super deep because I don't feel your deep threat, and then I can drive on these crossers and you get those bang bang plays. So I think he does fit it because of that Aldrick Robinson role that some people may not know the name that well, but I promise you their impact was felt in the offense. So I think, yeah, I think the vertical speed will be a big deal for him.
Go ahead, you were going to Corey Davis.
Yeah, and then that's where Corey Davis comes in. It's a complementary type thing. Corey Davis is your guy. He's your Pierre Garçon and your Andre Johnson. And now I'm not putting him there, but he's the guy that is able to, and I think I used this phrase with you guys in the springtime, he can shut down routes. So he's fast enough where he can get you out of your back pedal if you're a corner, if you're a squatty safety, but then can shut it down at 18 yards and get in those, you know, in between the hashes and numbers where you see a lot of those in-breaking routes of those digs. You've got to have a guy that doesn't take 27 steps to get out of his cut, but that he can shut his routes down. Literally, what I mean by that is be running full speed and then be strong enough and athletic enough to stop and turn back and get in and out of cuts. And I think that's where you're going to find his role, is those seam areas where, you know, you're at the top of the numbers, sitting down in those spots and those big crossing routes across the field, like Atlanta had done with a Julio Jones type guy running away from coverage. That's where Corey Davis is going to come in.
Dan, how creative can LaFleur be with Deion Lewis in the passing game?
You know, it's not necessarily a huge part of the fundamental part of this offense. The backs have never been a big deal. Now, we threw it to Arian Foster a little bit in Houston, but that was more a screen game. I think that's where you'll see Deion Lewis a little bit more, rather than just flexing him out and running routes with them, is the screen game. Obviously, L.A. had a ton of success with Todd Gurley with it last year. I do think that, LaFleur was able to see, I think this was 2 years ago, Kyle Shanahan used, down when he was in Atlanta, he used their back, Deontay Freeman and, what's the other kid's name? I forget. He used their backs really well in the pass game, especially when they got Tevin Coleman, when they got matchups against linebackers. I think we'll see that a little bit with Deion Lewis, but I think you're going to see him a ton in the screen game.
Let's stick with the receiver group for a minute. Rishard Matthews has been the best receiver on this team the last 2 years, going into a contract year now. Not a blazer by any means, but reliable. And obviously Marcus Mariota really counts on reliability. How's he fit into what LaFleur is going to want to do?
Yeah, he's going to be the guy that they asked everything to do. You know, I promise you this, they're going to ask him to be a part of their run game. And they're going to ask him to, because when you're the receiver that can be part of the run game, and I don't want to continue to go back to this, but it's just the reality. It's the heart and soul of this offense. When you're a receiver that will be a part of the run game, it only affords more opportunity in the play action game. So he's going to be the guy that they'll bring down in motion and maybe get him, you know, around the tackle box, and they'll release him up through some linebackers, not like he's going to block them, but they'll release him through that tackle-to-tackle area, and he'll become part of the pass game with crossing routes. He'll go block some safeties at some points. He's going to be a guy that's probably a big part of their rollout game, their bootleg game in the slot, you know, just getting the ball to him, you know, kind of some in-and-out cuts early on because he's a bigger physical guy. But he's going to be their jack-of-all-trades, I guess if you want to call him possession receiver, but I would imagine they're going to utilize him in a bunch of different areas.
And how about Tajay Sharpe, who missed last year, was a very precise route runner, super productive guy in college, who came in as a fifth-round pick and made a significant contribution as a rookie. But it doesn't seem much like a yards-after-the-catch guy, and this does seem a lot like a yards-after-the-catch offense. Somebody we had lately described him kind of as a strider. Do you think he's an automatic fit for this, or is there an adjustment to figure out what he can do with what they want him to do?
Yeah, you know, you always go, if they're good players, you make space for them. I can see when you look at him go, okay, where's his role going to be? Because the reality, too, is with those three receivers, with Deion Lewis as a back, and then having like the Jonnu Smith and Delanie Walker, you know, you've got six pretty good pass receiving options. Those tight ends are going to be weapons. And so I think the tight ends are going to be a little bit more better fits and impactful rather than a Tajay Sharpe. Now, I do think that year he had 2 years ago when he sprung on the scene out of kind of nowhere was a good year. I just don't think when you're sitting there as a team and you're putting together, you know, options, you've got six options that you like to get the ball to, especially in your passing game before him, more than likely. So I don't know where he fits in the role of this guy or that guy. I'm sure he'll have the opportunities, but I think there's some guys that are part of their offense that are going to be a little bit more desired. Can we get the ball in their hands more often?
Dan Orlovsky, our guest here on the Midday 180. Dan, we spent the first part of this visit with you discussing comfort level for Mariota and LaFleur. There are some quarterbacks in familiar offenses to this one out west with Jimmy Garoppolo and Jared Goff going into year two of this type of offense. So start with Garoppolo in year two. Full off season with Shanahan, a great finish to 2017. What have you studied this offseason that leads you to believe they'll pick up exactly where they left off with him?
Yeah, I think their first reality is I did a little bit of work looking into Kyle. Kyle hasn't been on a team when he's been the offensive coordinator where the quarterback didn't play well. So that's part of it. I mean, Kyle can just flat out call plays. So that's going to be a beneficial thing for Jimmy moving forward. You know, I don't know when was the last time we saw a guy go into a situation like that in such a short period of time and have the success that Garoppolo did. Now, if you look at him having a full offseason in that offense and Kyle having a full offseason with him and knowing, okay, what did we do bad and what did we not do well and what did we do good, you're just going to see more growth. I think the biggest thing you'll see from Garoppolo is him getting the ball out of his hands quicker. And that, again, takes time. He's coming from an offense in New England that, you know, wasn't necessarily predicated on the hitches in the pocket or timing and rhythm. It was more pre-snap reads and get the ball out. Well, the Kyle Shanahan and the Matt LaFleur offense isn't really a pre-snap read thing. It's a progression. 1, 2, 3 to your check down. 1, 2, 3 to your check down. You'll probably see Jimmy get the ball out a little bit more, a little earlier, a little bit more comfortable with his decision-making, which I imagine is going to be just the next level of success for him at that position.
And now for Jared Goff, what type of expansion do you expect now with him after that full year where the perception was, and I'm sure you've heard it, they got the most out of Jared Goff. They framed it. They framed what they could based on his skill set last year. How much of that is true and false, I don't know. You would. But how much can they expand to the plate now for Goff in year two of the offense?
Yeah, I always find that an interesting comment. Like, well, that's the coach's job, is to get the best out of the players. And if the best Jared Goff is, you know, Pro Bowl caliber year and 28 touchdowns, then you're going to be in a really good place for the next decade at that position. You know what? They did a ton of stuff at the line of scrimmage that kind of, you know, harnessed what the defenses could do. I would imagine they would expand upon that package because they were really successful with it last year. Sean's got a great feel of, okay, Jared, let's get to the line of scrimmage and I'm going to give you some plays. And I think Jared had a really good feel of, hey, you know, you can call some plays here. And this, you know, they go into the game thinking, if we want to get some on the line scrimmage, when you're going to call it, Jared, you're going to call three or four plays. Well, they'll expand his role a little bit. I would like to see them take more shots downfield with Brandon Cooks. And I think that's what's going to happen. They wanted to with Sammy Watkins last year. It just never materialized. There's a reason why they went and got Brandon Cooks. It kind of goes back to why I talked about Taylor's role is going to be so big for the Titans this year. Yes, Brandon Cooks is a next level receiver, but he takes the top off the coverage. That's the biggest thing that offense needs. So I would imagine Goff will be pushing the ball downfield with just big ball shots, 40, 50 yards downfield more.
One final thought on the Titans. Never been a screen team. Never effectively run screens. A lot of coaches said it's so much that goes into it, and you have to kind of decide to be a screen team. Mike Vrabel said, you look at the running backs around the league who are getting opportunities on screens and doing stuff, we will absolutely be part of that. How hard to develop that for an offensive line for the whole timing? How much is that a part of what you're talking about that takes time?
Yeah, it does. I think that's the biggest thing is for those offensive linemen to get a great feel for it. You know, I think the one thing that I experienced with the offensive line coaches that were in these kinds of offenses, they took coaching screens as inherently personal as they did getting these guys to block the outside zone or pass protection. It was just as important. It's the one offense that I've been in that when linemen got downfield, coaches just wanted these guys to throw at whatever defender was there. And what I mean by that is literally, you know, you take your body and you almost like you're diving into a pool. You throw at one of their hips, and because it's going to force those guys to move. And their whole thing was, I don't need you to block him. I need you to make sure he doesn't make the tackle. And so it's going to take time, timing-wise, for those guys. But once that screen game gets going, It's a whole new element for your offense that, you know, defenses have to figure out. And adding a guy like Deion Lewis in there who's shown to be really successful in that kind of role, it'll only help the offense.
Dan, always great to have you on, man. We're really enjoying your work as well on NFL Network.
Thank you. Thank you, man. I love coming on. I appreciate you guys asking good questions, man.
Thanks a lot.
At Dan Orlovsky
7 on Twitter. Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate you guys.
Dan Orlovsky, check him out on NFL Network. Total Access is where you can find him with some great video breakdowns, as well as on Twitter. He does a lot of periscopes there, like Paul would do during the season. Dan's trying to do one, I believe, once a week. So check that out at Dan Orlovsky 7.